You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. In your backyard. And worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumour.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes. What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes. Yeah, minutes. It's not your next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. As a parent of young girls who have already started using the internet, I thought I'd take a personal look at what the federal government has on offer when it comes to making your online world just that little bit safer for our kids. Firstly, if your mind has been elsewhere for the past weeks, the federal government, through the ACMA, have released software which can be downloaded free of charge from the NetAlert website and installed on PCs using Windows 98 through to Vista and Macs using OS X 10.4 or later. NetAlert states, internet content filters reduce the risk of your family coming into contact with something upsetting or dangerous online. Internet content filters offer a range of different functions to help block, screen and monitor unwelcome traffic. However, they do not offer total protection and work most effectively in association with a range of strategies to stay safe online. Instead of one application, there are in fact three to choose from. InterGuard, OptiNet and SafeEyes. So you do have to do a bit of research to find out which one works best for your environment. And we'll talk about these later in the show. All in all, the site is well presented and easy to navigate, a plus for non-net savvy parents. If you consider yourself a Luddite when it comes to computers and the internet, you're not alone. To find out more about the online world, which as parents you should, the first place to visit on the NetAlert website is the advice section, where you can download a parent's guide or even read it online if you don't know how to download things. This document runs a dozen or so pages and talks about the potential online dangers and highlights 10 things you can do right now to help your children stay safe online. It even explains commonly used terms such as chat rooms, peer-to-peer file sharing and spam. As a parent, you're responsible for your kids until they're 18 years of age, and this includes what they do online. As kids grow and learn, they adapt quite easily to new technologies, and most use it for good rather than evil. But unfortunately, there are a few who choose to bully classmates from afar. This can include things like identity theft through to SMS taunts at 3 in the morning. And as a parent of a child who goes down this path, you are legally responsible for their actions. And the last thing you want is a visit by the boys and girls in blue informing you of what your child has been up to online. So do it for yourself and do it for your kids. Get informed and get online. It'll open up a whole new world of possibilities.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
A phone company misleading consumers? Never. What is unified messaging and what does it mean to me? Australia's smart card is too smart by half and the PC game market grows 50% in just 4 years. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, more trouble for Microsoft's beleaguered Xbox games console, virus emails from the Office of Fair Trading, Telstra withdraws Next-G television commercials, Southern Cross upgrades capacity on its US submarine cable, and YouTube introduces advertisements to the bottom of video clips. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In more bad news for owners of the Xbox 360 games console, Microsoft last week warned that in rare cases, its wireless racing wheel may overheat and release smoke. The problem only occurs when the wheel is being used on mains power, so the company recommends that Xbox owners only use battery power until a new part is made available. The downside is that force feedback only works with mains power, and Microsoft has not indicated when the retrofit is likely to ship. Microsoft officials said that there had been no reported incidences of fire, personal injury or property damage due to the wheel malfunction, and that the retrofit would be sent free of charge to owners. The news comes after recent so-called Red Ring of Death failures with a high number of Microsoft games consoles, sending the company into damage control by being forced to extend factory warranties and replace thousands of faulty units. There were concerns last week over a spate of emails purporting to be from the Office of Fair Trading, which in fact contained a phishing attachment designed to elicit personal information from unsuspecting consumers. The suspect email claimed to be sent from the fictitious Australian Office of Fair Trading, which the legitimate ACT Office of Fair Trading believes it was devised to capture personal information that may be used in identity theft or identity fraud activity. According to a report from the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, recipients of the email are informed that their complaint has been recorded and that they should make a hard copy record by printing out an attached document. The ACT Commissioner for Fair Trading, Brett Phillips, said in a statement last week that the ACT Office of Fair Trading's records had not been interfered with, and that the people who have received the email are not on any fair trading databases or records. Mr. Phillips encouraged recipients to simply delete the email and not to respond in any way or attempt to open the attachment. In a major embarrassment to the incumbent telco last week, Telstra was forced to withdraw its current series of NextG television commercials after the ACCC received dozens of complaints that the commercials were misleading, specifically Telstra's claim that NextG was available everywhere you need it. The ACCC's General Manager, Communications Group, Michael Cosgrave, spoke on Melbourne Radio last week.
In this instance, Telstra has been running a number of advertisements in relation to its NextG or 3G network, and we've received a number of complaints around some of the taglines used in that advertising along the lines of get the coverage you need and with Telstra's NextG network, etc. We raised those concerns with Telstra, and Telstra have agreed to modify their advertising as a consequence.
The advertising campaign features high-profile sporting personalities and actors, such as John McEnroe and Dustin Hoffman, who, in the advertisements, have difficulties making telephone calls overseas, then comment that this wouldn't happen on NextG in Australia. It is understood that Telstra complied with the ACCC's request before it was necessary for the ACCC to take formal enforcement measures or legal action. IT Wire last week reported that the Southern Cross Cable Network, Australia's only direct link to the United States, is to have its capacity doubled, its resiliency enhanced, and its service flexibility increased. In the competitive market for the supply of international bandwidth, Southern Cross Director of Operations, Dean Viverka, said that each cable is currently equipped at 240 gigabits per second, and that the current upgrade will increase each cable's capacity to 430 gigabits per second by the end of 2008. The upgrade requires only the replacement of transmission equipment in each of the 10 cable stations. The new equipment can deliver 400 gigabits per second per fibre pair, a tenfold increase over the equipment it will replace. And on Wednesday last week, Google's popular video sharing service YouTube commenced featuring semi-transparent advertisements at the bottom of selected video clips. The overlay advertising, as it's been described, disappears after about 10 seconds if the viewer does nothing. If the viewer clicks the advertisement, the video clip will automatically pause while the full advertisement is displayed in a browser window. Overlay advertising is becoming more and more popular, especially with mainstream television networks, as consumers frequently record programs and traditional advertisements are either fast-forwarded or skipped altogether. Initial video advertisers on YouTube include Warner Music Group, News Corp's 20th Century Fox, and Time Warner's New Line Cinema. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft, patch Tuesday.
Oh. I was expecting you to say that. They fixed one problem and caused a different one.
They did. The compact disc turned 25. Happy birthday to it last Friday.
You've got your finger on the pulse. my finger on something.
Blu-ray seems to be starting to get a nose ahead. I don't know if that's the feeling everyone else gets.
You've led a very colourful life.
Oh, I have led a colourful life, and we'll continue to.
Oh, that's gutsy.
Our favourite communications minister?
Yes, she says 60%.
No, Senator Coonan's delusional. It's up. No, I'm sorry.
Okay,
it's up.
You heard it here first. I could be wrong. But I reckon there's a Google browser very shortly.
Mummy has fallen down the stairs, and I don't know what to do.
I'm just lying. Just telling you, I've done technical experiments.
Whack it on your memory stick and put it in your computer and your iPod and...
Yeah, it's the era of low-quality, watery-sounding...
Oh, yeah, now what happened to them? They went legal, apparently, didn't they?
Yeah.
Graham's never used them since, if I recall the promo.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And a very big hello to everyone listening to Tech Talk Radio. For this, and I've lost track of shows at the moment. I can't remember how many we're up to, but we're getting close to 150, boys, just so you know. Yes, Tech Talk Radio, everywhere you need it, apparently. Good evening, Dr. Ron. Good evening, Mark Diggins. And good evening, Graham Callaghan. A full contingency here tonight.
Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Are you everywhere you need it?
I have to be careful, because if I say I am and I'm not everywhere that everybody needs, then, yeah, the ACCC might have a go at me.
Exactly right. How's that? Anyway, we'll talk about that later on in the show, amongst other things. You've also had a chat to Microsoft this week about unified messaging.
Unified messaging and unified communications. So,
looking forward to that. I haven't heard it, and I want to know all about unified messaging.
Excellent.
Because everyone uses it these days, don't they?
They do.
In some form or another.
Sometimes it's in your voicemail on your mobile telephone. You might have unified communications set up and not even realise it.
Yeah, exactly right.
Not quite as unified as we would perhaps like, though.
Why?
Ununified communications.
Yes.
Mark's been travelling the world trying to unify everyone else's communications at the moment by hooking up mobile base stations to make sure they work. Has been up in the far north wet Queensland.
It wasn't wet up there at the time. Well, I think it was too far west out at Charleville. Big hello to Matthew Kelly, our listener in Queensland.
Oh, okay.
I did some testing with him, and he said, oh, you're on that show, or download a podcast. Oh, no, here we go. That was all good.
This is when it starts getting scary.
Yeah, that's right.
But did he know Mark before you met him, or did he just put the voice to the...
No, I'm not sure. He didn't say. I think he put two and two together when I sort of arrived up there.
Yeah. Oh.
So, it was all good.
Very good.
He enjoys the show.
All right, we're going
to talk
all about those sort of things very shortly. But first, let's talk about, you have a letter from, we had a query from a listener about Macintoshes and virus software.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did.
And Ben responded.
Ben responded. He said that McAfee is available for the Mac, I think.
Yeah, good. Mm. Well, I think it's a sign of the times, actually, really, when we start seeing virus software come out for Macs. Hey, have you seen the new Macs?
No.
The new iBook, they call them? Is that what they call them?
Have you got one?
No. I was watching Steve Jobs on his video thing talk about it today. It was very good. I had to laugh because he did a before and after shot of PCs and Macs. You know, this is what it, and this is all in seriousness. You know, they showed the mess of cables behind a PC, which genuinely there is. You know, by the time you hook your mouse up and your wireless camera thing and a spare drive and all that sort of stuff. And then they showed the new iBook, which didn't have any of that, just the cable for the computer keyboard and a little mouse sort of plugged in there. Oh, yeah, that's good.
So when they had your peripherals, like your scanner and your...
Exactly.
And
they neglected to show those cables. They neglected to show the fact that you can't get an extra drive into one of these things, so you have to put an external drive on it anyway. That's another cable. And then, it just went on and on and on. And I just think, yeah, come on, get real. A PC can look...
So they're not purporting that they're going to wirelessly connect to all of these things, are they? They're not going to, going to wireless or Bluetooth or something like that.
It did have 802.11n built in.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. What's that? That's about... What's
that? N?
I don't know, it's the next one.
Tell me, Graham.
It's the next
108 megabits per second on wireless networking.
Okay, it's the next G equivalent of the
wireless networking. Speed of G, is it? About twice the speed of G?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So, yes, it was interesting. And they've revamped all their software. The new iStudio, I think they call it, has come out, looking pretty snazzy. And they've revolutionised the photo thing. So, yeah, worth a look. Go and have a look. Apple.com. Have a look at Steve there selling his wares.
His little speeches and things are always pretty entertaining, aren't they?
I can get good grabs out of them for promos, too.
Now, I had some feedback from TARDIS3, who's a forum contributor and a regular friend of the program. G'day, TARDIS. And if you haven't been to the forum, go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au and you can discuss anything you like about the show with like-minded
What's
people.
What's a hot topic there at the moment? Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's all right. A hot topic at the moment would be spam. I think we're talking about spam before the show, weren't we? Ben May
is giving us heaps.
Hey, Ben, I've turned the spam filter off. I'm forwarding them all to you.
Ben, we're also signing up your personal email address to as many lists as we can find, so good luck with that. Now, TARDIS, after last week's show, we were talking about the major Skype outage that there was.
Oh, yes.
And then a little bit later on, quite unrelated, so we thought, we were talking about Patch Tuesday, which is Microsoft's regular patch update.
Yes.
Now, TARDIS put one and one together and came up with two.
Yeah.
Or 20,000 in this case.
The only one.
No. Internet telephony provider Skype today placed at least part of the blame for a two-day outage last week on Microsoft's monthly patch update.
Go on. You have to be careful how you read this.
I'm just reading it.
Okay. This is
in the latest update.
I might be able to help you interpret it in a moment. Go
okay.
On.
In the latest update on the situation, a spokesman from Skype said the disruption, quote, was triggered by a massive restart of our users' computers across the globe within a very short time frame.
Users, not clients, users.
Users, as they rebooted after receiving a routine set of patches through Windows Update.
So what's a user's computer got to do with restarting the Skype
network? What they're saying,
because the network is basically, at its core, a peer-to-peer network. So it relies on interactions between client computers to keep the network running.
So the spokesman went on to say that the high number of restarts affected Skype's network resources. This caused a flood.
Well, there's a weakness, isn't it?
Yes. A flood of login requests, which combined with the lack of peer-to-peer network resources, prompted a chain reaction that had a critical impact.
There'd be a lot of record companies that'd be happy with that, taking out the peer-to-peer network. Well,
the wrong thing.
They'll be putting out patches every other day.
Yes.
I must admit, both of my Windows 2003 servers decided to restart all by themselves, thanks to that patch that came out.
Yep.
So, it was good. We went down for a bit. Anyway, life's like that.
It should have come back up, though, all automatically, everything working.
Oh, it sort of did. Oh. It sort of did. I only have a thing in my event viewer saying one service didn't start properly. So thank you, Microsoft.
They're very annoying. You've got to track those down.
I've got to reboot my Linux servers one day. Do you want to come around when I do that, Graham?
Yeah, I can come around and do that. We'll have a Linux rebooting party. How many days has it been running now?
480-something at the moment.
Really?
That's pretty good,
isn't it? Does the electricity company manage to keep power to your place for that long?
Well, it's plugged into a UPS, so there's no point to the electricity company.
But you haven't had an outage for more than 8 minutes or whatever the UPS runs for, so...
Correct. That's right.
That's pretty good.
In well over a year.
And the thing isn't running out of memory? You haven't got any processors that have used up all your RAM or...?
Been absolutely fine.
I think I've got to get a boil lanced on that day.
Do you? You know...
You're not going for the reboot party?
No, I'll skip the reboot party. I think I'm fine.
You're going to steer clear.
Yes. Now, let's talk NextG, shall we?
Or a Lance Boyle or something. Yes, go on, NextG.
NextG, Telstra has changed a series of television commercials and advertising relating to its NextG mobile network. As you said in the news, Dr.
Rule. Oh, the news, yes.
After the watchdog said, you can't actually get it everywhere. And that's very true, because having made television commercials, and a few of them in my day, you have to be factually correct when you make allegations and claims like that on the television.
But it's everywhere you need it.
Obviously not.
The ACCC disagreed, Graham.
I think there's plenty
of... depends on who the U is.
Exactly right. I think it's a storm in a teacup. People know what the idea was behind the advertising, don't they?
Is it everywhere you need it, Graham? Because you're a NextG subscriber.
Well, it's been everywhere I've needed it so far.
Maybe it should be everywhere you need it when you can afford it.
Sometimes it's not even where it's supposed to be. No, because we're still getting huge amounts of unexplained, completely sudden call dropout.
Hey, listen, you
the
guys.
The call just suddenly ends. And that's the thing that's bugging me on next year at the moment. Sorry, Andrew.
I was in the middle of the city today, right in the heart of Melbourne. Admittedly, I was in a boardroom, which was accessible to things, and I could only connect to GPRS for my data, and it was awfully slow and awfully embarrassing. So there you go. That's right from the heart of Telecommunication Central in a capital city, and, hey, I couldn't get NextG, or the HSDPA. NextG's a brand name, sorry. Not this third generation stuff. So there you go.
GPRS is the data layer of the older GSM network.
GPRS, granny's running pretty slowly.
Oh, is that what it stands for?
I don't know, but it sounds pretty good, I would have thought, because that was about as fast as my laptop was going to go to bring up a web page.
A general packet radio service, but never mind.
That's it?
Oh, don't get technical on us now.
Sorry.
Dear. Anyway, there's been quite a bit of flack about mobile phones and all that sort of stuff, and it's, I don't know, whether these are all, and you've got to look at it with spin in mind here, because it's the best thing, really, isn't it? It's an election coming up, all sorts of, you know, goings on in the wonderful world of trying to drum up votes and things like that. But this is just a bit of a cross-section of general comments going on about Next-G and the CDMA rollout and what some of the CDMA users have observed when trying to connect to Next-G.
That they listen to their devices at loud or very loud.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the wrong... let's try that once again. Here we go.
I had an old CDMA which basically died, so I had to replace it. I was able to get an LG 500 phone. It was recommended to me, and up to date, I found it to be actually pretty good, like, almost comparable to the CDMA in my area of Canava, and I don't live very far out of town, so that side of it works really well. As you get away from the towers, it drops off dramatically, and I've heard lots of people complain bitterly about the service. I know that probably even in places along the highway, it nearly drops out near the border. And being up next to the Victorian-South Australian border, you're in no man's land. No one seems to worry about you too much.
We've got two properties. Yeah, one property is just out of Holbrook and we get excellent service. We can actually see the tower. And the other one's only a couple of k's from the tower, but it's on the other side of the hill. And we get virtually no service. We did complain about it and, you know, they were going to look into it. We had dropouts and things on the other place, but we could actually get service if you stood in the right spot. It's virtually got to the stage now where you don't get service at all unless you've got it in the car kit.
I do a lot of trips away on weekends, and I've just done my first trip last weekend away with this phone between Balwell and Mildura, and I've always had coverage with the CDMA. Now that they've got all their towers up, I had coverage right through with CDMA, and with this one I lose it quite a bit, and I travel on my own.
I live in a little town called Kingston, which is 30 k's north of Ballarat, but if I want to use my Next-G phone, I have to walk outside. Now, having said that, my wife and I just made a trip to Perth across the Nullarbor, and between the South Australian border and a town called Norseman, 1,000 k's, maybe even more, no service whatsoever.
I'm just on the same tack complaining about our Next-G telephone, which we've had for several months now. It's not a patch on the old CDMA. We live, I suppose, about 5 k's away from a tower on Mount Bainbridge, which is just out of Hamilton, line of sight, but very, very poor coverage. We live very close to the highway that goes from Hamilton to Mount Gambier, and sometimes we work in various areas along that highway, and the coverage is just intermittent, to say at the best. Only occasionally you can get through.
Now, normally people only ring up when they want to complain. I reckon there's a lot of people out there that have actually got good coverage on Next-G, although the fact that it does tend to drop out quite a bit. But I guess one of the things that you've got to ask, you know, they were comparing towers, and not all towers have the next service on it. That's correct, isn't it, Mark?
That's
could all
right.
be different
yep.
services
could be
on different...
Different service providers. They could be non-mobile phone towers. They could be anything, you know.
So just because you can see what you think is a mobile phone tower doesn't necessarily mean that that's exactly what it is.
And one of the callers there said that he could only get coverage if he puts the phone in the car kit. So that suggests that it's definitely an issue with the antenna or the phone end rather than the coverage of the network. There's coverage there, you just need a decent antenna to connect to it.
It's probably a bit unfortunate, really, that the federal government is using a user satisfaction survey to probably determine whether the Next-G coverage is rolled out sufficiently or in equivalent to CDMA. And this is what we've been saying on the show from time to time. It's normally these handset-related things, and Mark's here tonight, so he can probably confirm a lot of these things, that it's really handset-related, isn't it, as opposed to network-related?
Absolutely. There's... about 5 or 6 weeks to go till Ericsson, the company providing the Next-G network to Telstra, have got to fix up all the problems they've found as they've been doing their drive testing, as customer complaints are going in. So they drive the area, they find, this is wrong, it's not meant to be like this. They go back and look at it and say, oh, look, there's been a mix-up on the antennas, you know, it should be the one that's at the top of the tower, not the one at the bottom, or not the one that's halfway up. And they're going and fixing up all those problems as they've found them now. And, you know, the testing I've been doing recently shows that pretty much they're the same. If anything, Next-G is slightly better, But, you know, when it's like-for-like, when you've got two antennas on top of the tower, equal antennas, you know, like as in they're the same brand of antennas, same gain, sitting at the same height, they're identical. And, you know, I don't want to say that Next-G is better, but effectively you can probably measure it's different, but to a user it's, you know, effectively the same sort of thing. Now, a lot of the issues they're finding out, like listening to those people there said, oh, nothing over the other side of the hill. I wondered if they had service over the other side of the hill. We get back to the phone issues. The LG 500 that someone was talking about there, it's known to have a very poor internal antenna. Excellent in the car kit, but not so good. You get the LG 550, it's been improved. It seems to have a better internal antenna. So with looking at those sort of handset issues, new phone today, I saw it, it's a prototype, it's not released yet. It's probably going to come out with the Telstra-branded logo, but...
Will it have a blue tick on it?
It will have a blue tick.
Who's the manufacturer, can you say?
I shouldn't say.
Okay. Has it got an external antenna?
It is a whopper of an external antenna. In fact, the whole phone is huge. You know, going back to the old days,
it's a brick.
Yeah, it's nearly a brick. It is nearly a brick, but it's got some good things in it. It's got GPS included. It's got a very fat battery. So for those people who are living on the edge of cell, your battery's not going to go flat quickly because you're always transmitting at high powers. It's got this whopper of an external antenna that you can clip on the outside. It's ruggedized, so it's got rubber around the outside in case you drop it. Telstra's been nicknaming it things like the Grazier and the Farmer's Friend, and they're all just Telstra internal engineers, silly names for it.
But it's basically a working man's phone.
Yeah, and that they're really aiming at
the man on the land.
You know, the man on the land, the farmer, you know, he can take it out. If he drops it, it won't break. You know, it's got an external antenna you can plug on and get decent coverage from it. You know, it's got the big battery so it'll last. And
yeah, the external antenna plugs on, so it's an option.
It is.
Is it going to break and the connector going to fail and all of that sort of stuff?
Not likely. Not looking at the size of it. I say, everything's big about this. The battery's big, the phone's big, and the antenna's big.
You know, I can't wait to see this. Yeah. Any ideas when it's going to be released?
No, I'd say it's a prototype at the moment, so, you know, probably only a few months away.
It flies in the face of technological revolutions when it comes to telephones, doesn't it? Everything's smaller and smaller and smaller, and here we are, we've gone the other way now.
Yeah, but miniaturisation doesn't work with radio antennas.
No, we thought we'd have they presented they'd have a pull-out antenna like the old CDMA ones did.
Yep, yep.
But this one's a clip-on one, so I'm not sure why that was the case, but it's certainly going to be a good antenna, but it's also going to be one that you look at and go, whoa, that's huge, you know, I'll only have it on at certain times. Or, sort of reminds me of if you've seen a satellite phone where the antenna swings up, it's about that sort of size.
Mm.
Wow.
Have they solved the call dropout reason? You know, I think we're all
experienced. I can tell you they haven't solved it.
Really? No. See, I haven't had those issues, and I've been obviously working in the lab environment, so I get plenty of dropouts being too close to the base station that works off the test network. So I walk past it and it drops the call and that sort of thing. So I'm not experiencing it. I'm making a lot of phone calls in the wrong environment and not experiencing it. But whenever I've been out around the, you know, at home and that sort of thing, I haven't had the problem anymore. So, yeah, it's interesting you say that.
Yeah,
so,
well, I'm on...
I had two today.
Yeah, I'm on Next-G and my boss is on Next-G and I have to talk to him a lot, mobile phone to mobile phone.
And this is in one location or...
Often driving about and moving about, yeah. But even so, driving up and down like the Tullamarine Freeway should work.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And major arterial road here in town.
Yeah.
And I have heard that they had...
More often than not, a call will drop out.
Mm-hmm. There was one reason. I believe they'd fixed that reason, but yep. I sort of left the company during that time, so I wasn't sure. And their call dropout rate is equal to or better than CDMA and GSM now. So, you know, like comparable, I mean, your experience is different, but comparable across the whole network wide, Australia wide, it's an excellent dropout rate now, you know.
The competitors still haven't got it right either. Andrew and I were talking today, 3-3.
We were. We're not saying that Telstra's not bad, we're just saying that it's a very interesting technology.
It is, yeah. This is also on a 3G network, and I was mid-sentence and suddenly...
Where were you? Bottom of the tunnel or something?
No,
train?
No,
or?
This is potentially the problem. Mark might be able to clarify this. So I was at one of the highest spots in suburban Melbourne, right up on Waverley Road in Glen Waverley. And suddenly it just went, vink, the call dropped out.
That's a notorious spot up there. I've got a rough idea of where you were, near a roundabout up there. And, yeah, my GSM calls always dropped out up there as well.
Yeah, that's very typical of the way mobile phone networks work.
See, a lot of people would think, oh, look, to make a call, I need to be high up.
Yeah, that's right. And look, you'll get good signal there, but you get too much good signal. You get signal from every base station, and they're not all neighbours with each other, so they interfere.
Does the phone get confused, Mark, or the network, or get confused? Or?
The phone basically gets interfered with. It can see a signal that it wants to use. It asks to use it. The network says, no, it's not a neighbour of yours. You can't use it. And it keeps getting interfered with until you've dropped the call.
This is why I can't use them on aeroplanes, really.
Yeah.
So, it has nothing to do with navigation, let me tell you.
That's exactly right. It's the same with the plane situation where you're on one cell, but you could be, 50 k's from that cell, and you're seeing another cell 50 k's the other direction. And you mind you, there's, four cells underneath you that you can't use because they're directly underneath you, sort of thing. So, yeah, they're interference because they're not meant to be neighbours because they're so far apart. You're meant to neighbour to the next cell to you.
All right. That's a discussion for another day, too, because I'm sure this will become a fairly hot topic in the course of federal elections leading up, and I think the government's going to make a decision shortly about whether or not they're going to put some form of licensing condition on the carrier or carriers, which however this is going to be, based on whether they can meet the mark that they expect it to meet. So, anyway, we'll watch this space, and we'll get back to you as time progresses. Let's talk about Microsoft, because we touched on them briefly tonight about resetting all of our computers. We want to talk game consoles. And Microsoft this week have announced that they're going to give away giving free retrofits to wireless racing wheels with its Xbox 360 video game after hearing of malfunctions in a wheel component. Now, is this desperate measures for desperate times?
It's an expression that the wheel's fallen off, but in this case, the wheel is falling off, isn't it?
Yeah, from what I was reading, they don't just malfunction. They get red hot and smoke comes out of them. Is that
Well, that's authenticity for you, isn't it, if you're doing one of these car racing things? Well, boy, this is good, isn't it? The company said it was informed of about 50 incidents worldwide of a manufacturing in the Xbox 360 wireless racing wheel in which components in the wheel chassis may overheat and release the smoke.
Apparently it only happens...
and you should never let the smoke out of components, because once you do that, they don't work.
They don't work. Yeah, yeah. No, it only happens on mains power, apparently.
Does it?
Yeah, but if you run it off batteries, it seems to be okay. But you don't get the positive force feedback effect if you're running it on batteries.
Oh, okay. Mm.
There's apparently 230,000 of these wheels out in the field, so that's a pretty big recall. There's a lot of wheels to give away, isn't it? Mm. And I bet you they're just as expensive as... one of the ones that go in your car for real, just quietly. So.
That's right. Just send your whole Xbox in at the same time. We'll fix that red ring of death while we're at it. And yes, good luck with your Microsoft hardware.
Yes. Now, PlayStation 3, high-definition TV tuner. We touched on this briefly. And all that sort of stuff. Sony has taken another step to lure customers to its PlayStation 3, saying it would sell a device to let consumers record live television that can be stored on the game's console or transferred to a PlayStation Portable for later viewing. Now, we spoke about this last week, didn't we? Seems that Sony have actually announced the fact now that that's going to be probably in stores for Christmas, I would be imagining.
Good.
So for those who've bought
make
one...
some people happy, yeah.
If you've already got one, bad luck. If you're going to go and buy one, well, just sit tight for a bit. And the game market, while we're talking about games, the game market to grow 50% in 4 years. The market for video games is expected to expand by half over the next 4 years as it extends beyond hardcore gamers. I reckon hardcore gamers are probably the guys that really make up a lot of the numbers, because they do. That's all they do. They game. Do you play casually? You do, Dr. Ron, don't you?
I'm not a hardcore gamer. There are people who play professionally.
Yeah?
They're employed to play games.
Oh, especially in, I think it's Korea.
Oh, and here in Australia as well. Absolutely. People
they have television programs about computer games and people playing Warcraft.
Yeah.
And some people who play Warcraft professionally can do it in half an hour and, 100,000, they're so into it over there, and then you can do all these moves in the matter of, anyway.
Very fast.
It's just obviously, a modern-day Rubik's Cube. Someone who can solve it in a minute and a half, isn't it?
Turn your brain off and just sit there and tap. And
you can click and tap as quick as anything, and you'll win the game.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's, Okay, and the smart card. Do you remember the smart card that the government touted a while back? Well, I don't know whether this has fallen off the radar because of an election coming up or whatever, but plans for a national smart card have been postponed for at least a year, with the government admitting the deadline for its introduction was unrealistic. There will be a campaign to encourage people to sign up for the access card, and the proposal for one card access to welfare payments has been dodgy, they say, and controversial. Since it was raised in 2003, with opponents claiming it's an underhanded method of introducing a national identification system. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? That's good.
Social security numbers.
What Mark was saying a few weeks ago as well, you should have to be able to produce ID when you're making a telephone call and all that sort of stuff. It's important.
Yes, swipe your... It's just like a SIM card, isn't it? It's got a bit of data in it, and you whack it through the payphone so people know what's going on.
So was it unrealistic, or is it simply a new thing that'll have teething problems and the government don't want to see that problem during an election year?
I like the way you're thinking, Mike.
No, I just think... I mean, nothing to do whether it's the government's problem or not. I mean, just new technology does have teething problems. That's, you know, they're nothing more than that.
And ID cards are unpopular.
Yeah, some... I don't know if they are that unpopular. I reckon the majority still reckon they're okay.
You reckon?
Yeah, I reckon.
But if you could do away with your driver licence and your Medicare card and everything else, just combine five or six cards into one.
So don't lose it.
It's the minority that have a loud voice.
But you wouldn't, like, no one would be able to, no one would steal it. And if you lost it, it wouldn't matter because you'd have all the biometric security and everything else. You just report it and get a replacement.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Come on, get on board.
Yeah, get your DNA swab and hand in your little cotton wool stick when you go for your national identity card.
I'm starting to feel like I'm in the minority.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Yes, wherever you need it, on several radio stations around the countryside. Mark, full panel tonight. The contingency is here. Mark, myself, Graham, and Dr. Ron in the taking up over there in the wings in the
in
dark.
In the blue corner.
In the blue corner in the dark tonight, yes. Now, we've spoken about MP3 players, and we're going to talk briefly about them tonight before we go and catch up with Adam Turner's view from the couch. How many of you do you think have your hearing deafened or going slightly deaf because have your iPhone cranked up or your iPod or your i-whatever to the max whilst you're sitting listening to traffic? Now, Dr. Ron, you're a classic example of this.
Aye.
Do you pump up the jam when you're in the tram heading home from work?
Well, this is interesting. I find that I have my iPod set on my music player, not my iPod, I don't own an iPod.
You're the one.
Yeah, I find that I have it set at a comfortable level when I'm sitting on the train. And I get off the train, and because of all the ambient noise at the station and because of the background traffic noise and everything else, I have to crank it up two or three or four notches when I get off the train. And then I go inside a quiet building and I think, gee, that's really loud in my ears.
But yep, I'm with you there, and it depends on which train you hop on, at least in Melbourne it does, you know, because the really old ones are really noisy and you have to crank it up for that reason.
Yeah, that's true as well.
As a parent, I must admit, I'm a bit concerned about having my kids having lots of loud music, especially as their ears are developing at this point in time. And was it tendonitis, I think it is, the ringing of the ears?
Tinnitus.
Yeah, there you go. When I did my audio course and things like that, I was told that, if your ears are ringing, like after you've been to a concert or been to a very loud environment for a prolonged period of time, that is a sign that you've done damage to your ears.
I went to a rather loud venue on Saturday night and I came home, my ears were ringing.
Yeah, you're lying in bed, you can hear it.
Yeah, as I went to sleep, yeah, and woke up in the morning, there's still a bit of a ringing there.
Bob, there's some music you have to listen to loud, though.
Really?
Yeah, well, not your Vivaldi rubbish, but... Yeah,
personal things on the radio!
It's on.
Some music has to be listened to loudly.
Okay, well, Bob Cowan from the Hearing Cooperative Research Centre says that there are three main factors which should be taken into consideration.
That they listen to their devices at loud or very loud levels, that they listen to their devices for more than... a couple of hours per day, and that they listen to their devices 5 to 7 days per week. The majority of people that we sampled, of course, were using their device for public transport, and of course, because they're wanting to listen to their device or listen to music to overcome the background noise, 93% of the sample reported that they were aware of the risks to hearing from loud sound, but they differentiated noise from music.
So there you go, and there's Dr. Ron on the tram coming home. So you're in the target group there. He identified you as one of the three major groups.
Well, maybe 5 days a week for a couple of hours a day.
But do you find, because I must admit, like in the comfort of your car, which is relatively acoustically shielded, you don't need to turn it up too loud. But yeah, you can. You can sing, you turn your music up loud and you go, wow, that was loud when you come home. And yeah, it's like the telly at night. You sit in there at night and you think it's a comfortable level, and you turn on again in the morning and go, boy, who had the telly up that loud? Have you ever noticed that?
You adjust very quickly, don't you?
So are you going to alter your hearing habits, Dr. Ron, or is that it?
I don't know. Don't know if I will. I'm aware of the dangers of having music too loud in your earphones, but I don't listen to a lot of music. A lot of the stuff I listen to when I'm using public transport is podcasts, is talk. Talk radio type programs, and I don't know if that makes a difference or not. I'm not a professional or audiometric type person.
Okay, well, here's Bob Cowan again, and he's going to talk about the ramifications of loud music.
So then you end up with a sensory deficit. You just don't have cells that can detect certain frequencies, so you start to have a hearing loss at particular frequencies, in particular the high frequency area, which is the consonant area, which is very important in European languages for telling one word from another, but you also have the potential for associated tinnitus, ringing in the ears.
So there you have it. Tinnitus, the ringing. So if you're lying in bed at night, and I must admit when I was a young boy and went out to concerts and had loud things like Dr. On still does, you just get that ear ringing from time to time.
Yeah, I have both of those problems.
Do you?
Yeah, I have ringing in the ears at night, not every night, but I can hear it. And
is that because you work in a loud environment, or is it just something else?
I'm not sure if I work with a whole lot of equipment that had, you know, a very high-pitched squeal to it from, like, inverters and that sort of thing over years, being subjected to it for a long time,
mm-hmm.
or whether, you know, I had my Walkman in my day up too loud when I used to listen to it. But, yeah, I certainly have certain frequencies that are very low down, you know, need to be very high for me to hear them, and have ringing in the ears, and it's been checked medically, and they said, well, nothing you can do, just look after your ears from now on.
And you have? How do you do that?
It was so serious, the guy said to me, start to learn to lip read now.
Really?
Yeah, I don't feel like I have a problem, but, you know, in conversational party-type situations, I have trouble hearing people, and they said you should start watching the TV and start to learn to lip read. It'll just get worse. I think it's great, you know.
Well, there you go. Protect your hearing. It's like your sight, isn't it? Yeah, you've got to protect those senses that you've got and you've been blessed with. So, yes. Now, speaking of other senses, the government to investigate the porn filter hacking claims. Did you hear about this?
Yes, I did. I've printed out a news article here, which was posted about 59 minutes before we went to air today.
Now, that always affects a rundown, but go on.
It does. Federal Communications Minister Helen Coonan says claims a Melbourne teenager hacked into an anti-pornography filter are being investigated. A 16-year-old Melbourne teenager has described the federal government computer filter against pornography as useless.
Really?
Mm. Now, this, of course,
is... How many millions of dollars have the federal government spent on this?
All of
84.
Them.
84.
Yes. 98 or 89? It's one
84
of the
94 I saw written
yeah,
today.
It's a lot anyway. I can't be exactly accurate, but...
30 minutes, was it, I read?
30 minutes? Hang on, I've got the news release here. 16-year-old Melbourne student Tom Wood said he was able to completely override the filter after half an hour. Senator Coonan says the software vendors are taking a look into the matter. I wonder if we're going to get our money back as taxpayers.
We're going to employ the guy.
Yeah, well, that'd be good.
That's what they should do. They should get him. NASA should snaffle him up for the
Google
Space Shuttle program or something.
Or perhaps they should realise that they're on the wrong track entirely and perhaps promote some supervision and some better knowledge by our parents of how the internet is working.
Well, there was some very misguided senator that came on the news tonight, and I think it was the senator from the Family First Party, and he said that, of course, it's been hacked so quickly by a young teenager. The government's got this all wrong. What they should be doing is blocking content at the ISP level. That's a much more intelligent idea, and as Family First, that's what we'll be doing, and I thought...
I didn't think I had an opinion on that.
It just goes from bad to worse. I'm sure it was a senator from the Family First.
Fielding.
Party. Was it Senator Fielding? Yeah, I thought, get a clue.
It's interesting. I was having a discussion off air with another sort of mum before. It's interesting because you can block content to a certain age group, and then when the kids become aware of it, they will seek it. They will go out and look for it. And there's no amount of, you know, filters that are actually going to stop a young kid trying to do it. It's a challenge to kids. Heaven forsake, you know, before you turn 18, the challenge is to get into an R-rated film. After that, it's not a challenge anymore. You know, it's that sort of thing that kids try and do.
And they've got the time on their hands.
And the knowledge and the skill to actually get in there and do that, because this sort of stuff all comes naturally to them. So, once again, it gets back to whatever we've all been saying is parental. Sit down and, you know, surf the net with them.
Put the computer in the living room.
Do you reckon there's many that aren't in the living room? Laptops in particular. I reckon that's probably a big issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm just going to go to my room and do my homework. And you think, well, what are they watching? So
more and more schools these days have laptops for students as well. And then you're going to lose control of computers in the living room. That's unfortunate. Yeah.
All right. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. The spam filter's off for everyone's purposes tonight.
Do your worst.
Yeah, do your worst. Come on, Ben. And we're going to continue our discussion about this with Adam Turner, who has actually, I was reading some of his articles in the mainstream press, and he's decided to give us a vocal version right about now.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
With an Australian federal election looming, the Howard government is chasing the Puritan vote with an $84 million porn filtering program aimed to protect the sensitive eyes of the voting public. Too bad a tech-savvy teenager cracked it in minutes. As of last week, the government's netalert.gov.au site offers a choice from three porn filtering applications: InterGuard, OptiNet, and SafeEyes. Keen to see if my tax dollars were being spent well, I decided to try one out. There's nothing on the download page to tell you the difference between them, so I picked one at random, Optinet. It's a 32 meg download, which would take more than 3 hours on dial-up, but if you're bandwidth challenged, they'll post you out a CD. Later, I stumbled across another page on the site listing the differences between the software, a page that obviously should be linked to from the download page. According to the list, most of the applications monitor the use of chat rooms and instant messaging. All offer free porn filtering using blacklists compiled by the software providers. They also offer whitelisting, which means you can nominate a list of acceptable websites such as ABC Kids, and everything else is blocked. Anyway, when I installed Optinet, it asked me to set an administrator password, install itself, and then requested a restart. When my XP test machine rebooted, I expected to be faced with an introductory spiel about the joys of porn filtering and a setup routine, but there was nothing except a new icon in the taskbar. When I hovered the mouse over it, the word active popped up. I have a list of nasty porn sites, which I keep behind glass with "break in case of emergency" written on the front, that I use to test such software. Most firewall software I've tested with inbuilt porn filters has failed miserably when I've thrown a handful of porn sites at it. Zone Alarm 7 is the only one to have blocked 20 random porn sites. Others have performed far worse. Anyway, Optinet's porn filtering turns out to be surprisingly good. 20 porn sites later, it had blocked all 20. Its censoring of Google searches was hit and miss though. Using common terms you would search for when scouring the net for porn, it completely blocked the results page for some, but not others. The same with the Google image search. Sometimes it blocked the entire page, and sometimes it blocked some images but not others. Even when a rather graphic image did show up in a Google search, I was always blocked from visiting the actual site. This might be fine for stopping young children from accidentally stumbling on porn, but what about hormone-charged teenagers who deliberately go looking for it? The first thing I tried was installing the Opera web browser, which isn't listed as compatible with the software, but Optinet still kicked in to protect me. Now I was becoming more determined, so I decided to attack the software itself. Foolishly, the Optinet installation folder is sitting out in the open in the Programs folder, where someone with the simplest knowledge of computers could find it. I tried running the uninstall file, but it asked for the password. While this had failed, I now knew where the application lived and what it was called. Now it was just a simple matter of right-clicking on the taskbar, opening the task manager, and looking for processes that started with OPT. I found two, OptProxy and OptGUI. So I right-clicked on them and said End Process. Now I fired up my web browser and hey presto, all those porn sites were available again. But my victory was only short-lived. Within a few seconds, OptProxy had launched again and the sites were blocked again. The laughable thing is the file that logs my attempts to access sites is simple to open and edit. So I can keep disabling OptProxy whenever I want to look at a new site, and then go into the logs and delete the times that I was caught in the act. You can also keep poking at the software for weaknesses, knowing that you're not leaving any trail. When I restarted the computer, the task tray was up and running again, and when I checked the software's logs, there was nothing to indicate that the software had been disabled for a quick spot of porn surfing. Nothing popped up to warn dopey parents that their tech-savvy kids had outsmarted them. Sure, this isn't a very elegant solution, but a hack is a hack, and a glimpse of porn is a glimpse of porn. Be careful though, some of the changes I made affected the TPM security chip on my notebook, locking me out of the machine. It took a ghost system restore to get it up and running again. Now, don't have a go at me for explaining how to do this. Any kid capable of reading a blog or listening to a podcast is capable of figuring this out for themselves. That's my whole point. Parents are delusional if they think this software will stop tech-savvy teens finding porn. They need to know the truth about how simple it is to find your way around it. The really disturbing thing is that some kid actually discovered an elegant hack for the software after only 30 minutes, while making it look like the filter was still running. He then hacked the upgraded version within 40 minutes. So that's how the government spent our tax dollars, on porn filtering software that can be disabled with a few mouse clicks, but it will win votes from fools who don't know any better. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb.
I just got some spam from some Arabic country. I couldn't read it. It was lovely pictures, though.
Dr. Ron.
But it shouldn't be this hard.
It shouldn't be this complicated. You should just click on something and get your song.
Graham Callaghan.
Do you routinely take the covers off new devices just to see what's inside them?
Mark Diggins.
It's a bit of a shame to come to this because you shouldn't have to have identification to make a phone call.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You going
to
read the letter?
I can.
Do you want me to read?
Glad we're all organised.
We did have a production meeting this evening. Didn't we? Strictly rehearsed and finally polished program.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Can I just say that Adam doesn't have any 15 or 16-year-old kids in his family either.
That was a good view from the web browser,
but
wasn't
he's,
it?
He's so, yes, it was. The couch, he was, I wonder if he, well, he was on the laptop because he had to rebuild it or something after.
From the laptop.
Adam, see, they'll just go, you start tweaking with those things, this is what happens. Anyway, very good. Let's talk about, well, put it this way. Have you opened up Google Earth of recent times? I bet you haven't because...
I haven't, no.
You should download it. There's a new whiz bang feature in there. They've turned the cameras away from the Earth, and we now have the Google Skies. I tried it today.
Ah, yes.
You can see constellations in the sky. It's not really quite as good as Google Earth, where you can come down and the resolution gets better.
So you can't,
because
you
out
can't
there, a pinprick of light is a pinprick of light, regardless of how far you zoom in on it.
Oh, you can't see the little green men.
No. Unlike where you go down on Google Mars and you can see the cheese.
Oh, Google Moon, that's right.
Google Moon, that's right. Mm. Google Mars is just red in a big strip. The Google Moon's just, the cheese when you get very close. A very good sense of humour over there in Mountain View, haven't they?
So you can't. It's not like you can zoom in on, what is it, Alpha Centauri, that's actually two stars right next to each other?
Well, I didn't try that one. You might be able to.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's your homework on the next one.
With a telescope, you can see it, so I wondered if they'd done that or whether it's just... Yeah.
Well, you get it's a bit like one of the constellation pictures that you see at the planetarium where they join all the lines and all the stars together and it makes a unicorn or a teapot or whatever it might have to be, some poor Orion's belt or something upside down if you're in the other hemisphere. But at least it does, it looks at where you are and says, oh, if you look up, this is what you're going to see. But it's worth having a bit of a look, especially if, as we've got summer approaching and clear skies theoretically, except if you live in poor old Queensland where they've got floods, yes, you can sit there and it'll show you the sky and you'll be able to see what that star is and what that constellation is. So
that's a good idea. So you can tell a planet from a star and you can also, it tells you where they are for that time of year.
Yeah. Yeah, like everything with Google, they do it. They seem to do it reasonably well. So it's a free download. Just visit the Google site and Google Earth, if you know what I mean, a verb followed by a noun there, and you'll be able to download the latest version. And I think it was only about 4 or 5 meg. I don't think, well, it didn't take long to download, that's for sure. I really didn't have a close look. So there you go. Have a try. Now, Dr. Ron, unified messaging. You've played with it in a professional capacity. Is there any future for it?
Yeah, there is. Unified messaging is extremely exciting. It's been around for a long time now, but we're starting to see more and more systems become more and more tightly integrated.
If you could describe it in a sentence, what is unified messaging?
Well, unified messaging is the ability to access any of your messages from any interface.
Okay, so if I'm on my mobile phone, I can check an email.
Correct. If you're at your computer and you've got your email client running, you can check your faxes or listen to your voicemail messages.
Can you listen to a fax? That'd be tricky.
You can't listen to a fax. You can view it.
Okay. So,
but if you're on a telephone,
yeah,
for example, and you want to see a fax, you can forward it to a fax machine.
Ooh.
Or you can forward it to an email address. Say that you're travelling interstate and you're in a motel and you check your voicemail and it says, you've got a new fax message. You think, damn, I better check that. So you should
fax
be able to forward it.
Obsolete concept, really,
well,
when you think about it.
A lot of people use it. There's a lot of fax equipment out there, Andrew. So you can forward that message to a fax machine at the motel, or you can even forward it to an email address, and you could then check it on your email.
And this is where you can get a fax to your mobile phone these days. A lot of service providers actually allow you to do that, don't they? And it gets stored and forwarded somewhere?
Exactly. That's exactly right. Now, the extension of unified messaging is unified communications. And I spoke with Microsoft's Oscar Trimboli about unified communications and the way in which you can be at any device, whether you're at your computer or your telephone, your mobile phone, your desk phone, logged into a Skype client or internet messaging, and you can receive any of your telephone calls, incoming calls, to any device.
Do you reckon Microsoft are going to nail this? Because this is new for them, isn't it? Have they been dabbling in...
It's very new. I think they are definitely on the right track. The challenge with unified messaging and unified communications comes where you're wanting to integrate computer systems with other types of hardware. And in the
What about software? What about Outlook and stuff like that? Does it do that?
Well, it does, but they've got a handle on Outlook, and people understand Outlook. Where it becomes a challenge is where you want to connect your Exchange server to a Fujitsu PABX, or what the Americans would call a PBX system, or you want to connect your Lotus Notes Domino server to an Alcatel phone system, for example. And this sort of integration is really a very specialist field.
Okay. Well, let's have a listen and see what you came up with. What was he saying?
This is Oscar Trimboli from Microsoft.
Recently, I spoke with Oscar Trimboli, the director of Microsoft's Unified Communications Business Group in Australia and New Zealand. While unified messaging has been around for some time, enabling voice, email and fax access from any device, Unified Communications extends this model to incoming call control. When a customer dials your office telephone number, Microsoft's new Unified Communications server can make an intelligent decision about how to handle the call, based on the number that's been dialed, the time of day, what's in your Outlook calendar, or even based on who's calling. Can you start by telling us, for those listeners who don't know, what is Unified Communications?
Unified Communications is, very simply putting, people and not devices at the centre of the communication process, so that when you contact somebody, you're contacting a person. You don't have to figure out, should I call their mobile, should I send them an email? The system will figure that out for you and be smart enough to know if they're in a meeting to get them on the right device.
So this sounds almost like a call control type system. It recognises where a person is or what device they're on or available on, and it directs the call that way. So do you advertise like one number?
Look, the choices you give people to contact you are up to you. So I use me as a simple example. On my business card, I only have one telephone number, and I have my email address. But I think at the end of the day, my reason for doing that is I want to give people a choice how they choose to contact me. So we don't want to be prescriptive and say people have to go and use one number. The systems are smart enough today to know and work out, based on systems like a calendar, when you're available and what the right method is. So if your calendar says you're out of the office, then obviously the best place to send that call is to the mobile phone and not to the desk phone. And the systems are smart enough to figure that out now.
There's two new products, Office Communication Server and Office Communicator 2007. Can you give us a bit of an overview as to the differences between those two products?
Office Communication Server is a third generation product that we just released, in fact, last Thursday. So it was a great milestone. It combines web conferencing, video conferencing, instant messaging, and telephony systems all into one place, so that you can just click to call, you can click to instant message, you can click to set up a video conference. And the Office Communicator 2007 sits on your PC or your mobile phone or a web browser, and it enables you to connect back to the server and do all the functionality that you that I just mentioned.
So like Office Communicator 2007, that's like the client side of the environment, is it? And the communication server's the actual backroom server that runs and controls all this technology?
That's it. You've got it. One's for the backroom and the server and the IT department, and the Communicator 2007 is for the end user and the client. The PC is the way most people experience that.
In terms of integrating with an existing system, it might be a Microsoft house and I've got Microsoft products in place already, like an Exchange server or something like that. Does Office Communication Server assume the role of one of the existing systems? How does it fit together?
At the core of all these systems is the directory service called Active Directory, which is part of Windows Server, and that understands both the Exchange server and the Office Communication server, so it pulls those together. You don't have to think about pulling that together yourself. The systems do that automatically. But the important thing is that playing by yourself in Unified Communications isn't the full story. Unified Communications has to be a broad ecosystem of people across telecommunications carriers, CABX providers and video conferencing providers, and systems integration partners and hosters. And Microsoft doesn't do all of that. So we say Unified Communications needs an ecosystem to pull all that together so that you can work with all various types of PABXs like Nortel and Avaya and Alcatel and Cisco and Mitel.
That's a very good point, because part of the Unified Communications concept is that you're combining all of the different communicating technologies, if you like. And if I've got
probably a substantial investment in an NEC PABX or an Ericsson phone system or Cisco or Nortel or Fujitsu, one of those ones like you mentioned, I want to make sure that if I'm going to invest in the Microsoft products that it's going to integrate well and integrate tightly and provide a seamless interface.
Yeah, and I spend a lot of time going and visiting customers with those other vendors, and the customers basically say, look, we've got a big investment in you, and we've got a big investment with another provider. We're not throwing out either of them. We want them to work together. You two guys figure out how to bring that together for us, and we're doing more and more and more of that at a software level for both our side and the other side.
In this world where we're all driven by budgets and cost saving and having to look at the most cost-effective way of doing things a lot of the time, as a manager, if I'm implementing a system like this, do I need to look at buying proprietary Microsoft hardware or handsets or anything like that, or can I use, apart from the existing infrastructure we spoke about before, like telephone handsets, can I use a sound card in my PC, in my headset, or do I have to buy Microsoft hardware?
Look, absolutely. You can. You've got a total range of choices there from Bluetooth headset devices through to USB-based headsets and microphones, through to your existing telephone that you use today.
So that can just be generic equipment, Oscar, that they've already got that's like USB compliant or whatever?
Yeah, look, a couple of folks I was talking about were literally saying, you know, this stuff you can get from Harris Technology or one of Officeworks or those kind of providers.
I mean, we've come from like 10 or 15 years ago where we had to buy, you know, proprietary handsets and things for employees' desktops, and that's where they always used to sting you in terms of budget. But now if we've got it like down to a commodity level where you can just buy things that you plug into your PC like a USB headset or microphone, it's going to make it a much easier prospect, isn't it, to roll it out?
Yeah, and that's, you know, for home-based scenarios, you know, those simple things. But if you've already made that investment in the hardware in your office, then why throw it out? It works perfectly well and it's integrated, so keep it there.
Yeah, absolutely. Office Communication Server, there's an enterprise version and a standard version. Can you give us a quick rundown of the differences between the two?
Really simply, one for relatively smaller organisations and one for a really large organisation with complex disaster recovery scenarios.
Where can we go to find out more about these products if we're interested in introducing them into a business or an enterprise?
Sure, there's two places I would say to go if you want to learn about products specifically. It's microsoft.com/UC for Unified Communications. And if you want to learn about what's happening in the Australian market, we've got a blog that we talk about specific Australian customers, leaders in the unified communications industry, and that's blogs.msdn.com/OscarTR.
Thanks very much for your time today, Oscar. I know you're extremely busy, but we really appreciate you talking to us on Tech Talk Radio and giving us an overview about Microsoft's new unified communications products.
Thanks, Ron. Have a good day.
That covers the office side of things, but what about the home user sort of thing? You know, I think it's a bit beyond home users, and you'd have to be a fairly sophisticated sort of home user, wouldn't you?
You would. The new Unified Communication Server is specifically designed for small businesses, small to medium enterprises, but if you're a home user...
Like what? Like five people in your business or something and they're on the road? Is that sort of where it's targeted?
Well, if you had a small business with five people on the road, I think it would be ideal because there's a scaled-down version, as Oscar said, and, I mean, it'd be great because it would free you from actually needing to be at your office. It would free you from needing to go to the office to press a call divert button or a call forward button on your telephone, which all of us are familiar with. You go out of the office and you think, damn, I didn't divert my phone or I didn't hit that call forward button.
Oh, all the time.
But with this sort of technology, you can log in with a web browser and you can redirect your calls. You can log in with the web browser and say, I want every call to go to voicemail, but any call from Andrew or Graham or Mark, I want to come through to my mobile. So you've got this flexibility with like a rule-based system where you can send your calls.
Very interesting. Well, it'll be interesting to watch this space and see what happens with it, because I think you got to. It's an interesting. You've got to get the culture right in the office for these sort of things, because like our office, there's the tech savvy and there's the not so tech savvy. A bit like the home environment in a lot of respects, isn't it? Sort of.
Look, it's not for everybody, and I'd say have a look at the product and what it offers. But for people who maybe have a sales department, they're sales driven, or they've got separate sales or technical support groups, things like that, it might be very useful.
Speaking of interesting things too, the response to the Spam Act review and commencement of consultation on unsolicited commercial faxes. Senator Coonan's been having things come out thick and fast from the office up there in Canberra today. This was one of them. The Minister for Communications, Information Technology and the Arts, Senator Honourable Helen Coonan, invited communities and businesses committed comment on the impact of unsolicited commercial faxes. Can I say, I changed my phone number, my fax number, because of unsolicited commercial email from Dell, of all people. I would never buy a Dell machine because they kept faxing me.
I had an organisation that kept faxing me once upon a time. I can't remember who it was, but they used to send these annoying spam faxes in the middle of the night, which would be like 15 or 20 pages of current catalogue.
And how did you deal with this, Dr.
What Rick? I did was... One day after I
before he
them,
says this, can I just say that the producers of Tech Talk Radio don't endorse
or condone the following behaviour.
Exactly, but here we go. This is what an IT person who's got a mission will do.
After making a dozen phone calls over the space of a few months to say, take me off your spam list, this was before we had the do not call register, obviously, I got 5 or 6 or 7 pages of the fax, and I stuck them together with sticky tape, and I kicked off a call to their fax machine, and as it was feeding through, after the first page had fed through, I sticky taped that to the last page, and I let it run for about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and it would have sent about 100, 200 pages, just in a loop, and it was their material. And I think I actually, now I remember, I think I actually printed out an A4 piece of paper with, in big letters, it said, stop sending me junk faxes, so every third or fourth page that came through... which wasn't their spam, was this printout. And then I turned it off, and then surprisingly we got taken off the list after that.
Well, there's a good solution to a problematic outcome, really, isn't it? Does the word bitter and twisted mean anything to you?
Well, I just hope I wasted as much of their paper as I had of mine over the previous few months.
All right.
Had the side effect.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, the bitter and twisted Dr. Ron there. Don't ever fax him if he's not expecting the fax, or you will be the victim of circumstance there. Graham Callaghan is here. I don't think he's quite as malicious, and I don't think Mark even knows what a fax is down there. He's in the world of high-tech mobile communications. And, yeah, don't try faxing us either, because we don't have one. Email's the way to go. Spam filter free. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
Talk Radio.
Andrew McComb.
I think what people have on their homepage tells you a lot about what the person's like.
Dr. Ron.
In the past, we've talked about ways in which we can...
string them along.
Manage. I think it's the corporate expression, Mark.
Graham Callaghan.
Don't open things that you're not expecting, even if they do appear to come from somebody you know.
Mark Diggins.
I heard a rumour today.
Ooh. I like your rumours.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's $5 a month for 10 megabytes.
Oh, ouch.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the panel on Tech Talk Radio this evening. Live from the studios of 94.13 WBC in Melbourne, all around Melbourne, and on relay to great radio stations up in Cairns. Oh, would you like me to push that fader?
That'd be really nice.
All over the place.
Man, faders are faded up.
Yeah, even Central Victoria and Western Australia and Perth.
Streaming on the internet from such places as Chicago.
Absolutely.
Illinois.
Yep. No, it's amazing where we're heard these days and people want to listen to us. It's absolutely unbelievable. Anyway, let's move on. Just a couple of brief things in the news today. PC World, I think it is. PC World Business report that Tasiambo's moved to electronic reporting. Is that going to be good or bad, Dr. Ron? Do you know about that? Not that I know much about it. It's just a headline.
What sort of reporting?
Tasmanian Ambulance Service will procure some 70 rugged notebook computers over 4 years to facilitate the migration of its paper-based client care reporting process to a new electronic system.
It's a good thing. If it's similar to what they've done in Melbourne, they can electronically transfer patient information to hospitals and things like that when they bring patients to hospitals.
So they scrape somebody off the road, and instead of asking them their name and writing it down, they type it into the PC and it gets sent off.
Correct.
Excellent. So they'll need to do touch typing now. Yeah, good. In other news, Toshiba.
With gloves on.
With gloves on.
Blue
Yes.
Yes. Is it like a blue tick? No, sorry. Toshiba QOS Quosmio, if that's how you pronounce it, G40, Yes, disappointing. No high definition DVD RW. It's one of the new notebooks that's coming out. Seagate to offer solid state drives. Toshiba to offer a 320 gig laptop drive from quarter four. And
that'll be good.
Dell delays the spread of Inspiron laptops and things like that in the US. And the other interesting news is, you know, these dual core processing chips and things like that.
Yeah,
they're going to tiles now because they can't get any more joules in the one layer. They've gone to tile processors. They're going to be the new in big thing.
Oh, right, new layers or something.
Yeah, they're going to tile their processors now, as opposed to multiple cores.
The lasagna approach to processor design, is it?
If you say so. It could be awfully messy if we do the lasagna approach. But yes, in a nutshell. So there you go, some news straight off the thing. What else was I going to say? Just briefly, because it's not on the rundown. iPhone linked to AT&T hacked. That is that you can now, so there's hackers say that they've found a way to use their Apple iPhone on networks other than AT&T, opening up the covert device, the coveted, I wish I could read tonight too. The coveted device,
the coveted
rival,
covert device.
That's the one. It's hardly covert. Don't drop them out of your top pocket, by the way. We've all seen the video now. To rival carriers and overseas customers, according to web reports. And also, the iPhone gets a European carrier as opposed to an Australian carrier. According to British Financial Times, Apple has chosen the UK carrier O2, French carrier Orange, and Germany's T-Mobile to be its European iPhone partners. So if you're heading over to Europe in the not-too-distant, you can get your iPhone and plug it into one of those carriers. Who's going to get it here, do you reckon?
Yeah, one of three, or be someone who's reselling a network.
Could be.
Yeah.
Crazy John's going into his own. He's going to be one of these virtual networks.
Well, this is it.
He's going to buy bandwidth off someone and flog it.
You might have the Crazy John iPhone, for example.
Oh, my God. Heaven forbid. Spammers. Spammers use YouTube to spread Stormworm. Graham, what's a Stormworm? Do you know anything about this?
No.
In yet another twist to the Stormworm menace, spammers are using fake YouTube sites to trick users into downloading malicious code, which could turn their PCs into bots. It's interesting, isn't it? There's new bot software too out now, which ISPs can load up and they can detect a bot miles away. Mm. Stop it from being a bot or a zombie, whatever they call them in those sort of things. Anyway, and whilst we're talking about mobile phone carriers, Vodafone. 60 new Vodafone stores will open inside Myer department stores over the next 2 years after the two companies signed a mobile products deal. So you go. Does that exclude, when you sign up a deal, I wonder if that's exclusive. I wonder if that's going to get rid of Telstra, Optus, Three and all the other carriers and they'll only stock Vodafone.
Inside Myer stores?
Inside a Myer store, yeah. Who knows?
Could be. Myer's a very large department store in Australia, for those of you who are listening overseas.
They are. Well, they call Grace Brothers in Sydney too, I think. That's the Myer's equivalent up there. Video Easy set-top surprise. Retailer Video Easy says the appointment of administrators to its set-top box supplier Mobilesoft has come as a surprise, but it won't derail the plans for its electronic delivery. Don't know how that works. If you go into liquidation and you can't get your little set-top boxes out there. But anyway, Video Easy Managing Director Paul Unicki said that he had only received the news that the administrators had been appointed to develop Mobilesoft when informed by Australian IT. So that's interesting. But yeah, it's a sign of things to come, really, isn't it? When are you going to be able to dial up, instead of go to the video library, when are you going to be able to dial up and watch a movie on broadband? I don't mean download it and play it, which is what we all do now, but to actually stream it in from the video library.
Go to the catalogue, the full catalogue of the movie producers, and pick the movie you want to watch and click go, and it appears on your TV set or on your big screen.
On demand, and they bill your credit card $5 or whatever the weekly overnight standard whatever rental is that...
the way it should work.
And another very interesting thing which came out, remember how we have a copper deficiency in certain parts of the world? In fact, was it some... we had it on Tech Talk Radio a while back where a particular town...
was stealing telephone cable.
Nicked the copper and took a whole village out somewhere because they took the copper between one town and the other. Well, anyway, some of the telcos are getting a bit wised up to this, and from the United States, US rural telco Embark is offering a US $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of anyone stealing its copper cables in Las Vegas. amid global crime spree targeting increasingly valuable metals. But there you go. The junkies at Las Vegas, oh dear, where am I going to get my cash now? Instead of doing a drug store or whatever they do, they go, let's go and nick some copper.
This is a problem that's been around for nigh on 100 years or more.
Can I just tell you, I've been to Las Vegas on several occasions and there's not much copper there. I don't know where they're getting it from.
As long as there's scrap metal dealers, there'll be people that steal copper. There was a huge problem here in Melbourne not so long ago with people stealing power lines from
railway...
Overhead power.
Overhead power lines on train lines.
I hope they turn the electricity off first.
1,500 volts, something like that.
Yeah, 1,500 volts DC. That's it. So those that succeeded did, and those who didn't, they scraped up the crispy critters the next morning.
And I know of two instances with Telstra as well, where they once pulled up all the power cable. It was a run-in to the hut itself.
Yeah.
Stole that, and then they had to put a generator on during the day and then take it away at night, because I figured if they're going to steal a power cable for the copper value, they'd steal the generator as well. So they'd take that home at night. And the other one was
Did they put the base station off after hours, did it? Sorry, you can't make a call here because someone's nicked our
power
supply.
That's pretty much what happened. They'd have the generator run during the day. That would charge the batteries. The batteries would run for, say, 8 hours, and then over the rest of the night, bad luck, there was no service.
So
the generator came back the next day.
That's just before it got driven over by an armoured personnel carrier. But that's another story.
And they've also stolen the feeders, which is the coax, effectively.
The cable
joins
between
the base station to the antennas. Yeah, and they've stolen that for the copper value as well.
That's amazing.
A lot of it going on.
All right. Now, while we're talking about mobile phones, we recently talked about this show, well, you did actually, Mark, about a femtocell. We were talking about, I think, in context with aeroplanes and running picocells in aircraft, and you said, but wait, there's more. If you want to start your own telephone company and put your own base station in, you can go and buy your own femtocell. Now,
yeah, not quite like that. I think the telcos provide it. But, yeah, there is a femtocell, and we had some...
So Ray sent you an email. Ray Buck, I think. Yeah, what was the upshot of all that?
And I answered Ray, and I asked the question at work today, and the word was that if... the question Ray asked was... how does your phone decide on whether you're going to be on the femtocell or on the outside network? And
good question.
Yeah, that was a good question. There's several different ways you can do it, and I went through those. But I actually asked the question today, and the guy said, no, it's purely on signal strength. The strongest one effectively wins. But where the femtocells are meant to be used is usually where there is no or poor coverage. So you'll be using it, say, in a bunker three levels down in a basement, like I know some buildings like that, or, you know, if you're living in a valley and you get poor in building, it's all right outside, but it's poor in building. This is where femtocells come into their own, because the femtocell will always be stronger because you're closest to it and, you know, line of sight to the signal inside your house.
I thought they were for telephone company executives living in Turek.
No, South Bank. No,
oh, sorry.
Salt water, fresh water tower.
No. They don't have them yet because it's just a prototype.
Oh, okay. The tech heads haven't let them go yet.
No, that's right. So they're trialling the concept. Now, where it'll be interesting is later on when they start using this, maybe like 3 did initially, or I should say Orange used it initially, where they say, well, we've got a good strong signal outside, but we might want to... You might want to have your own femtocell where you get local call costs or certain plans, so we're not sure what's going to happen there. But it's very ineffective to have their own frequency to do it, because spectrum costs so much, so they're not going to tie up a whole carrier of spectrum just to run femtocells unless they can make a lot of money out of it, because that's more important.
And they just chuck it on 2.5 gig where everyone puts everything else these days. You probably haven't got a handset for it, but nonetheless, why not?
Yeah, that's right. So you still got to have the frequency, don't you?
Does it work in a cellular type arrangement? Can many people use a femtocell, do you think?
Well, I guess you could, but if it was registered that base station, you could actually lock out others from using it. So wouldn't be using it in that respect.
You wouldn't have your neighbours hijacking your femtocell and making calls on it.
That's right. But you wouldn't have control of that, I don't think. I mean, it's all in concept stages. Lots of things you could possibly do with it, but they wouldn't allow that to happen.
Does Diggins come up on your mobile phone display when you connect one up at home instead of Telstra or Optus or 3? Do you get Diggins
on
network?
The next G network doesn't tell you where you are. It doesn't tell you what cell you're on anymore.
No, it doesn't.
That's a bit of a gripe.
Oh, well, that's what was on CDMA, you know? Same like-for-like coverage, isn't it?
Oh, so what, CDMA never told you where you were?
I swear the engineers hate that, because they've always got to put the code in, and they've got to say it's new coverage when it first comes on air. A month afterwards, they've got to change it. And if it's, you know, Melbourne Cup Carnival, they've got to put that in. They just hate having to change that thing around at all the time.
So, poor engineers.
Yeah, I know. It's just one of those things. They've got better things to do than to change the code that gets sent out, you know, the network.
Now, what else have you got? You were talking something about Optus?
Yeah, now, Optus are soon to announce the winner of their tender. So they're going to be...
This is for hardware and stuff, is it?
So this is for who will provide the equipment for their Opel rollout. Who's going to provide it?
WiMAX.
Well, WiMAX is part of it, but HSDPA was part of it as well. And they're going to run it at 900 megahertz. Now, there's the Chinese company, which I can never remember the name, Huawei or something, can't say it correctly, who's been doing trials with Optus. So they're one of the teams, one of the groups who are going for it. Ericsson's going for it, and Nokia, who've traditionally provided all of Optus's equipment are also going for it, but we don't know if Nokia's got any offering in the HSDPA range as yet, so that'll be coming out soon. It'll be interesting to see who they go with, you know, someone like Ericsson who provided the Next-G network, someone they've been doing trials with, or Nokia who they've traditionally gone with but may not have any offerings as yet, you know, on out and about sort of thing. And I just want to bring up something that no one's probably mentioned before. Is, you know, we talk about the closure of the CDMA network and how it may be delayed and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just mention that if you delayed the closure of the CDMA network, the way the Next-G network is growing at the moment with so many subscribers, there could potentially be an issue where you'd run out of capacity and people, in theory, could could not make a call because there's no capacity left. And then we'd put that down to the network as being the issue, when really the issue is there's no frequency to use because the government's not allowed the CDMA network to be switched off so that frequency can be reused for HSDPA.
Oh, I'm with you. Right.
Think about it as potential. The government delaying could actually make the problem worse.
Can they actually wind down the capacity of CDMA? Like, as in, you might have, channels, you could drop it down to 25 or something like that.
So you can, but say there's three channels. Let's say there's three channels for CDMA at the moment, because they're all wider these days. As channels go up, you know, like we're talking bigger and bigger bandwidths, so less and less channels. If you took it down from three channels to two channels, well, let's say you take it down to one channel, that still takes up the room of just one channel, because one channel of CDMA is 1.25 megahertz, so three channels is, you know, 3.75 megahertz. For one wideband carrier, for one Next-G carrier, you need 5 megahertz. So you need to clear all three of them out of the way before you can get your next channel of
how many calls will you get into a channel?
Well, it's a variable limit depending on, you know, the size of the bucket of the power that you've got and how many people. And, like, you can get, well, on CDMA at the moment, which is 1.25, at the Spring Racing Carnival, where everyone's close to the base station, you can get over 40 users at one cell, on one frequency. But, you know, if they're all on the edge of cell, you might only get three on a country site that's not running an amplifier. And
cell has power limitations, and if everyone's a long way away, it's going to be pumping out a lot more power.
So it's a variable thing. It's you know, how long's a piece of string? It depends on so many factors. So it's hard to answer.
When they turned off the old analog network, they left it running in some places in the bush, didn't they, for quite some time after they turned it off in the main population centres?
That's right. So is it
possible they do something like that?
No, because what you've got is, in that case, you had 10 megahertz of spectrum and you were able to put CDMA down the bottom end and leave some amps channels up the top end, and they were putting on a recorded message saying, you know, this service is no longer on air because they had room for both. But they've already got CDMA on the bottom end of the band and they've got Next-G on the top end of the band. For Next-G to go anywhere else, it has to take all of the CDMA spectrum.
So we need to trust that Telstra are looking after us and let them turn off CDMA so they can make Next-G actually do what it's supposed to do.
I'm just saying it's a potential issue that could come up. The longer it drags on, the more
subscribers they'll get, and the more tricky it'll get.
Yeah, and it'll actually show up as poor network and can't make a call, but it's really because you can't make a call because there's no capacity left because everyone's on one frequency, one channel.
You don't get the congestion tone like you do on the old system, on the old analog, I mean on the fixed line systems. You know, we used to get that long, isn't that right, Dr. On? You used to get a very long sort of engaged tone, which signified you couldn't connect because
that's
everything was new.
Network congestion time.
Yeah, you don't get a recorded message or say, we can't connect you because of congestion.
No,
it just won't connect.
You need a channel to actually be able to do that.
Yeah.
So your phone has to tell you that it can't do it, so it says not available.
The number unobtainable tone, NU tone, it's called.
I noticed Mobile Musters is doing a very big advertising campaign, at least down here in the southern parts of Australia, looking to recycle mobile phones at the moment, and I suspect they're targeting CDMA handsets too, just quietly. So, if you've got your CDMA handset, it stays. Well, January 28, I think, was the day they're going to turn off. Got a crystal ball, Mark? Do you reckon it'll go by then, or do you reckon?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and very confident it'll be off on that.
Okay. There's another rumor. We had the Google browser rumor last week, and Mark reckons the CDMA will go by that particular point in time.
Quick question for you about Next-G handsets, Mark.
Yep.
Are there any Next-G handsets available now, or will there be, that don't have cameras built into them?
Oh, no, I wouldn't think so. I mean, I see what you're saying. Could they make a cheap phone without a camera?
Yeah, now the reason I ask is my father asked me this question today. He said, when are they turning off CDMA? I'm going to have to get a new phone at some point in time. He goes to a lot of places where he does equipment inspection and plant inspection, and he does this to industry. And a lot of the places he goes to now, they say you need to leave your mobile phone at the security gate. You can't take it into the plant.
Yep.
Why?
Because there's a camera in it.
Yeah. No, that's a very good point.
And he says, but I've got an old Nokia 2110 or something, or whatever he's used, something incredibly old piece of technology. And he says, it doesn't have a camera in it. And they go, oh, that's all right. Then take your phone in with you. Yeah. You've got a camera. You must leave it here. We will not let you, for security reasons, take your camera inside.
Yeah, that's right. Now, GSM, old phones, you can do that. And it's good to have that sort of cheap thing. But it doesn't goes against what Telstra's trying to do. They're trying to get people to use more and more services, So
they want you to be video conferencing and doing things like sending MMS and picture messages around, all that sort of stuff.
That's right. So they don't want to be selling a phone like that. Maybe in the future they might sell, have the grey Nomad phone that only makes phone calls and nothing else and comes out cheap, but not at this
stage. He said, I want a next G handset without a camera in it. Otherwise, I'm not interested.
Not at this stage, I would think.
Okay.
It's a valid point, actually. I never would have thought that you'd want to buy a phone for security reasons without a camera in it. But anyway, I guess obviously there's a need. Where there's a need, there should be a market that's...
Well, where he's working, the people don't want visitors and contractors walking around with cameras.
Especially, they normally say, have the camera in it, but if you don't want to use it, that's your choice. We'll still sell it to you cheap.
Yeah.
In your case, or in your father's case, it's very specialised, and I don't want a camera because of certain reasons.
That's right. I don't want a camera in the phone. I just want the phone.
All the new ones will be coming out with GPS functionality now too, I would imagine, so they can utilise the new stuff that we've got available to us on Next G.
More and more, we'll see that. Yeah, there's the new one that Mark was talking about, the mystery manufacturer one, and also the Nokia is now starting to come out with a GPS.
When do you reckon 1-800-Google is going to kick off in Australia too? Which is directories that they do in the United States now, where you ring up, it's a free call, and you can query. It replaces directories in Australia. It's working brilliantly in the United States, and it will come here very shortly. That'll put a cat amongst the pigeons when it comes to carriers, won't it?
A non-network specific inquiries number.
Yeah. And this is where...
So is there an operator at the end, or is it recorded voice?
Recorded voice. Okay. But I think you can go through to an operator if you can't do it. So,
okay. But it's cheap.
Because the reason why I mentioned that is because when Tech Talk Radio moved offices from one end of the world to the other day, we got the Google Map out, and Google interrogate us about all fax numbers, employees, this, that, and the other thing. They're building their database. That's exactly what they're doing. They are now building their database so that when Google 1-800 or 1-800-Google hits here, which replaces 1-2-2-3 or whatever the 1...
It depends who you're with, doesn't it?
You'll be able to use the wealth of that as free call instead too. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We can go on like this for hours, but we won't.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Probably the last segment this evening before we do our favourite bits, which is the Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week. But before that, Dr. Ron has an update on us about Prince William's Facebook profile. Dr. Ron, what can you tell us about Prince William?
The heir to the British throne, Prince William, has reportedly signed up to the online social networking site Facebook using a pseudonym. The Daily Mail is reporting that the British royal is using the name Bobby Devereux, who himself was a minor British television celebrity who made his name as a comic impersonator in the 80s and 90s. The profile is restricted, but lists 38 friends, and they include...
What do you mean by restricted profile? What's a restricted profile?
It means you can't access it unless you are invited. But one of the friends is Chels D, which the paper says is Chelsea Davey, the South African-born girlfriend of William's younger brother, Prince Harry.
Oh, yeah, but this is identity theft. Well, anyone could start this up.
Well, maybe.
Sorry, I'm cynical.
You need to... I tried to set up a...
There's a couple out there. One's Jay Howard and one's P. Costello.
That's it.
It's not necessarily who we think they are.
I think I'm getting old, though, because I tried to set up a Facebook profile to try and ask Prince William to be a friend, but... I couldn't get my Facebook profile working. That was beyond me, I've got to say. But
hey, with our politicians on Facebook and things like that, how many friends have they got? That's got to be a bit of a slanging match, I would have thought. Who's got more friends, Rudd or Howard?
Yeah. Let us know.
Oh dear, we digress.
On air at techtalkradio.com.au. If you're a friend of Prince William's on Facebook or anything else, let us know.
Yeah, now, tell me, what's going on with the Simpsons video pirated on mobiles? Are people sitting there, and we're talking about cameras and mobiles before, are people sitting there and picture theatres with their mobiles recording The Simpsons, are they?
Well, for one man, the answer is yes, and he was arrested and charged.
Was this in town?
This was in Sydney.
Oh.
And reading between the lines, a 21-year-old man from Western Sydney faces up to 5 years imprisonment after he was charged with uploading a pirated copy of The Simpsons movie on the internet.
Ah, so he wasn't caught in the act, he was caught after the act.
Yes, the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft said that it was the first legal copy of the hit movie to be intercepted anywhere in the world.
Oh.
Police alleged the man illegally filmed the movie via a mobile phone on July 26th, the first day of release, and within hours had uploaded the footage onto the internet. Well, it'd be pretty grungy on a mobile phone.
Yeah. Wouldn't your arm hurt after doing the first 30 minutes?
You think so. And you'd get the shakes too, wouldn't you? It'd start to, and you'd have the heads bobbing up in front of you and stuff like that, and the sound
people
of the
behind you munching popcorn, yeah?
Yeah, and people going, shh, like that. And
people going, put your phone down.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you laugh, really, don't you? All right. We're going to come back with the gadget, the odd spot, and the website of the week after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
This week's Gadget of the Week comes from WesComponents.com, one of my favourite suppliers. They supply a lot of components to, you know, microwave ovens and communications, that sort of thing. One of the things I saw in one of their latest brochures was a combined antenna for your car, which had CDMA, NextG, GSM, and GPS. So it's a GPS antenna.
GPS as well?
Yeah, built in, and you stick it to your windscreen, and it's got two coaxes coming out, one for your GPS and one for your mobile phone. Which
so it's a glass mount one, is it?
Glass mount, yep. For a reasonable cost, I didn't bring my notes with me, so I can't tell you what it was. But it was like $80 or something.
Gee,
so
that's
really,
all right.
Really reasonably priced.
Was it on glass? It stuck to the glass?
Yeah, stuck to the glass and had a 27 dB amplifier built in like most GPS antennas do. And, yeah, really good. Now, that just got me thinking, though, that if you've got CDMA antennas out there and alike, anything that's external add-on to it, it actually works on NextG. They're the same frequency, as we were talking about earlier tonight.
So don't chuck your old antenna out.
Yeah, if you've got the broomstick antenna because you're working the country and that, it will plug straight into your NextG if you've got the right adapters, and it will work. You don't need to buy a new one for NextG.
It's the same radio frequency.
Same frequency.
Have these guys got a website that they've got?
www.wescomponents.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Have you ever been away from your PC and thought, damn it, I wish I had access to my videos folder right about now, or my pictures or audio?
Yeah.
You've got contents at home and you think, oh, I need to be home, or I need to wish I'd copy that onto my memory stick or something.
Yeah, you don't have to ring up the wife and get her to email it to me or something.
Exactly. This is the
web terminal services.
Well, for those of you who are not as tech savvy, there's a website which you must check out. I'm extremely impressed with this. It's called orb.com. www.orb, O-R-B, B for Barry.com. It's a media sharing service, and it provides a web interface to any directory on your computer.
Wow.
The way that it works, go to orb.com, download a small server application, and that's always running. It's like in your icon tray or your system tray on your computer, your Windows computer. You can go to any web browser then, as long as both machines are on the internet. and you can open up a web page and you can see all of your files in your My Documents.
How does it go through firewalls and networks and things like that? Can it?
Well, it runs its own little web server, so yeah, it works through port 80. Yeah.
Well, there you go. So it'll be open up into organisations and things like that.
That's
if you know how to connect.
And it's got little applets on the screen which make it really easy for you to view videos, listen to audio, all that sort of stuff. If you've got a TV tuner card in your machine and you're on the other side of the city, and you think, I wonder what's my TV tuner's doing at the moment on Channel 7 in Melbourne.
Hey, I've never wondered that.
Well, if you want to know what your webcam's looking at,
if
Andrew,
you just can't miss Home and Away.
That's exactly it. You go to your orb.com login, you can see what's happening on your computer.
So nice and secure.
What's the address again?
www.orb.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Oddspot on Tech Talk Radio.
No such thing as a problem here on Tech Talk Radio, because if you live in the United Kingdom, a Welsh woman trying to call British Telecom's operator, BT, was left hanging on the telephone for a total of 20 hours. Ever rung the phone company and been stuck online for 20 hours? No, that's not bad, eh? The customer who called a telephone company helpline after an engineer failed to turn up to install a telephone line was forced to endure the sounds of piped music during several calls over 3 days.
That's almost as long as you were on hold with Engine.
Well, I don't mention the war.
I think we did on a previous episode. 20 hours is a good effort, though.
That's not bad, is it? And it's, if you ring, like, I've unfortunately had time on my hands where I've had to ring ISPs of recent time to check things out, you do end up spending quite a bit of time in the hold queue.
Yeah,
and do the green sleeves wears very thin after a while.
Imagine listening to green sleeves for 20 hours. You'd lose the will to die, wouldn't you?
but it's like, I've been hanging on now for 4 days and 16 hours. I'm not going to give up now. I'm
going to hang it. Can only,
yeah. You are the second caller.
No, you are the next caller.
You are the next caller.
And I wonder why people get angry at their call centre staff.
Dear, you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Been listening to all four of us tonight. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins, and myself, Andrew McComb. Before we go tonight, Ian Hayes has been listening to us on the Shoutcast stream. Said it started breaking up after about 9:30. Dr. Ron, must have too many people connected to it again.
Oh.
And thank you for your report, Ian. And Jeff Gates. Jeff, you should be in bed. He's in the other side of the world in the United States. And he says Google has the SMS auto reply, which is more widely used than the 800 number. One sends a text with a business or name to 466453. And the system replies with text.
That's pretty good.
Also, the iPhone does not allow streaming, so you can't stream to an iPhone. Well, that's all right. We don't appeal to that market.
It doesn't let you run Flash either, I don't think, with the web browser.
Does it? Oh, well, there you go. There's some disadvantages. What else did he say? Only playing with downloaded content, so one cannot listen to the live Tech Talk Radio streams as I do with my Motorola. Well, there you go, Jeff. I'd stick with the Motorola. By the way, have you tried the drop test with your iPhone yet? There's some good videos going. Anyway, check it out. Thank you very much for your email tonight, Jeff.
Thank you very much to Oscar Trimboli from Microsoft for conducting the interview about Microsoft Unified Communications.
Indeed. Thank you to everyone who participates in the show. And we'll do it again, same time, same channel, same everything. Don't forget there is a podcast version of us which runs 2 hours. And if you're listening to us on other things, you might be listening to the 56-minute edited version of it. That's pretty good too, but you can get the rest on the podcast. Visit our site, techtalkradio.com.au, and subscribe. Until next week, it's bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.